From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on May 16th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. Before we start, we got two big birthday shout-outs at the top here.
Shout-out.
Yes, my brother Nicholas is 1 year away from 40, folks. Give him a big shout-out.
Shout-out.
40 light, pushing 40. I'm mentally preparing for 40, so I'm here for you, brother. The grays are there, but hey, the hair is still there, so we're happy. That's all that matters. And of course, our wonderful friend of the pod, Meg Kennard, also celebrates her birthday on this May 18th.
Shout out.
Nick and Meg sharing a birthday. They're not twins, only I am a twin on this podcast. Me. And actually, no one knows how old Meg is, so they could be the same age. She transcends space and time, so happy birthday to them both.
Shout out.
Wish them a happy birthday. Give us a shout, 803-563-7169. You can also give AT some parenting advice. You can give me some support advice, how to be a supportive friend when your friend is going through parenting. What to expect when your friend is expecting and has birthed a human. I guess this is my life now. Let me know how I should handle this situation. 803-563-7169.
Shout out.
All right, folks, we're starting our summer talk series, right? Where we intersperse different interviews and special episodes throughout our podcast offerings throughout the summertime because the State House might go on vacation, but we don't. But we still do, but we don't. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Now, on this episode of The Lead, we're looking back at the racial integration of the University of South Carolina more than 60 years ago. That's when the first Black students were admitted to the flagship university. Now, this conversation is coming to you the same week as the 70th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education, that landmark Supreme Court ruling that integrated schools. South Carolina was one of the original plaintiffs in that case with Briggs v. Elliott, which was rolled into Brown. Now, Dr. Henri Monteith Treadwell, Robert Anderson, and James Solomon Jr. were the first three Black students admitted to the University of South Carolina for the fall 1963 term, desegregating the university. This came after Harvey Gantt did the same that January at Clemson University, also with little disruption. So now I'm going to take you into my April 19th conversation with USC history professor Dr. Bobby Donaldson and Dr. Henri Monteith Treadwell. Dr. Henri Monteith Treadwell, Dr. Bobby Donaldson, thank you all for joining us today on this monumental day. I want to have a conversation about the history and what's going on with this statue unveiling, but first, Dr. Donaldson, I want to get some context about what life was like back in 1963 when this historic event took place. Set the scene for us. This was 9 years after Brown v. Board of Education, as well as Briggs v. Elliott, the Supreme Court ruling the landmark decision there for school integration. This happened 9 years after that decision happened. Trace for us how that went from grade school level up to higher education and the integration of the University of South Carolina.
So when Dr. Treadwell was a young woman, she and her family were well aware of the landmark Supreme Court decision on May 17th, 1954, in a case of Brown versus Elliott, Brown v. Board, Briggs v. Elliott. And on that date, the United States Supreme Court, in a unanimous decision, declared that segregation in public schools was indeed unconstitutional. Now, what's ironic about that date and that moment is that African Americans around this country were fully aware that if the United States Supreme Court declared segregation unconstitutional in public schools, in elementary and secondary public schools, then what are the implications of that? Here now, the courts have affirmed that segregation is unconstitutional in public schools. Well, maybe it's unconstitutional at lunch counters, in theaters, in hotels. Maybe it's unconstitutional on buses. So what you begin to see between 1954 and the early 60s is consistent and persistent litigation. Some of that litigation and some of those movements in South Carolina, ironically, were organized by the Monteiths, Dr. Treadwell's family, who were actively involved in shaping the post-World War II civil rights movement in this state. So by September the 11th of 1963, Dr. Treadwell, her family are fully mindful of what has transpired in Mississippi, in Georgia, in Alabama, and they also are fully mindful of what happened at Clemson College on January 28th of 1963, when Harvey Gantt walked through the doors of Clemson, challenging traditions and opening the doors for African Americans in higher education in South Carolina.
And it's interesting too, because we're talking about higher education institutions in South Carolina. Clemson, you just mentioned, University of South Carolina, we're here talking about this one. But when you look at other institutions like the College of Charleston, they didn't fully integrate until, I think, 1967, years after the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So there was still a lot of pushback even after we got these big steps occurring at other institutions.
Well, the other thing to be mindful about is a week before Dr. Treadwell enters the University of South Carolina, there's also a group of students in Charleston who are entering the schools for the first time, including a woman named Dr. Millicent Brown, whose father was the president of the Charleston NAACP. And so Clemson, the University of South Carolina, and the public schools of South Carolina are being integrated almost a decade after the Supreme Court had declared such education to be unconstitutional.
And it took even years to get even more fully integrated too. But Dr. Treadwell, I want to ask you about your journey. Walk us through that time and what it took for you to become one of the first black students to enroll at the University of South Carolina, along with Robert Anderson and James Salmon Jr. What was that time like? Tell me about your experience at University of South Carolina.
I walked onto a campus that was really, in some ways, muted in its response. We did not have the uprising, the uproar that many other institutions had when these steps toward integration and actual integration occurred. I often say, holding my breath to see what would happen next. But the day went smoothly. And the thing that I have to emphasize all the time is that while we talk about the role of African Americans in integrating the institutions, there were lots of whites who were also supportive. And to my pleasure, even as I was enrolling that first day, there were some people who smiled at me, some faculty. And I couldn't really believe that they were smiling at me. And later, they told me, yes, we wanted you to feel welcome.
And that must have been pretty encouraging, too. I mean, I'm wondering what it was like. You attended for 3 years when you graduated. And what was it like day in, day out in the classrooms? Was it always, would you get some of those moments, or were there also plenty of moments of hard days?
Most of the moments were isolating. The classrooms were not places where I made friends. There were a few people who would come along and walk with me to a class, but essentially it was isolating. I'm not indicating that it was negative. It was just, that's just the way it was. And I believe that a message that I would deliver to people who even today enter institutions or environments where they are the only one or one of very few, accept it and learn from it and help it build your character so that you are never alone and you're always able to move forward. So I really, in reflecting on all of this, know that it was valuable to me. Do I think people should have to continue to go through that? No, I don't. But I think it should be one of those little character traits that you just put away for the times when needed so that you don't just back out and walk away.
Dr. Treadwell, can you tell us what made you want to subject yourself to that, to become one of the first people to enroll at the University of South Carolina? When you have historically black colleges and universities across the state, I know that's not the same thing in this situation, but what made you decide to say, hey, USC, not Allen or Benedict or South Carolina State?
Well, I graduated here after 2 years. I came to the university with a large number of honors credits, so I wasn't here that three-year period. You know, it was a time of, I built skills, and I don't necessarily respond to everything you ask, but as I reflect on it, I really want to think about the things that it gave me love of music, love of language, love of art, and it really opened my eyes to other opportunities, other things that I could do with my life. But I have a friend here today who was a USC student, happens to be white, and we've been friends ever since Carolina days. And she's come up from Charleston to be with me, and she was actually in my wedding. So you see, it's a mixed story when one goes back into those days. Why did I subject myself to it? My family was so immersed in the civil rights actions across the state until in some ways I was born into it. You know, they would talk about it constantly, the steps that were being taken, the people who were being involved, the people in Clarendon County that we helped to sustain themselves. I was involved in when canned goods came in or clothing came in. I was one of the ones sitting on the floor, very small, but trying to organize and separate things. So I was born into it, and really there was no walking away. In fact, you just knew that you had a place. And when my turn came, I took it.
I definitely want to talk more about your family because it is so interesting to talk about that. But you brought up the reason you went to Carolina. I want to ask you what your aspirations were at that time, and where did your education take you through life?
I thought that I would go to medical school. One of my uncles, Dr. Henry Monteith, actually, as I had graduated, came up to me and presented me with a letter of admission to medical school. But by that time, I was more interested in the broader issues of public health and of social welfare and well-being, not welfare, but well-being overall. And of course, I was influenced by my Aunt Majeska, who had worked across the state in public health activities. So I began to see a larger story. I have to say that I also thought that I would focus my time and energies on efforts relating to women. And I did for some time. But ultimately, it expanded into looking at the issues of men and family construct. So to bring it back to my family, we would sit around, they would sit around talking, and we youngsters would sit around on the floor listening. And my Aunt Majeska would have exemplary figures, Thurgood Marshall, Roy White, many others, to come to her home. So a Sunday afternoons after church, we were sitting on the steps eating cookies and watching these really important individuals come through. And it impressed us.
And I was going to kind of go into my next question, talking about your family history here. Your ancestors are so important, including your Aunt Majeska, who helped hire a lawyer for this case that you were a part of at the University of South Carolina. And she also did the same for Sarah Mae Fleming, who was assaulted and kicked off a bus here in Columbia in June 22nd, 1954, for refusing to get up for a white passenger. That was a full year before Rosa Parks in Alabama. And the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals found that the segregation on that bus was unconstitutional. So just really steeped in history, what did you take from your family? That did you feel them on your shoulders, in a sense? Were you standing on their shoulders when you were going through the doors here at Carolina?
Without a doubt. My grandmother, Rachel Monteith, established a school for African-American children because they were not allowed into the schools in the county, and the education was not always what was to be expected. She started that school out there on the properties that we used to own, and the school now is in Eau Claire. My mother taught in that school, and I remember just being there at that time, too young to go to school there, but in the classroom. Those things impress you. You see it, and you like to imitate what you have seen. My grandmother, daughter, Majeska Simpkins, was extremely active in civil rights. She was a teacher. She married. She was not allowed to be a teacher any longer. She worked in public health efforts in South Carolina. And there's no better way to sensitize yourself to the needs of people than to look across health and public health. There are just enormous disparities that continue today. And it's one of the reasons I moved my work over also into men's health, because we look at the policy issues. All of this is embedded in the policy. not being able to come to the University of South Carolina, there was a policy decision that had to be overturned. There are still policy decisions that deter equal health access to all in our nation. And so I've spent my time working on that while at the Kellogg Foundation. I was able to make grants in many places around the world, quite frankly, and began to really look at family issues. And I hope that we'll do more of that. I sometimes think, I'm here, I'm a woman, I want women to see that they can lead change. But I also want people to understand that it doesn't have to be a big start. It can just, once you see a thing, you should respond affirmatively. And you can't just say, oh, look at those poor people over there. You have to decide, how do you insinuate yourself into problem solving and solutions building? So I think that is what my family gave to me. My uncle, Henry Monteith, was very instrumental in the Victory Savings Bank. All of these efforts tied together, because when teachers were being fired in Clarendon County and elsewhere, some economic aid was given to them. They had access to capital to the Victory Savings Bank, which they did not get through regular banks. And that bank still lives as a part of Optus here in Columbia. So they've built, my family really built a framework, and they worked in that framework. They did not just say, this is what should happen over there. They thought about it, they strategized, they developed tactics, and they did it.
Dr. Donaldson, I want to take you back to higher ed integration back in 1963. A lot went on behind the scenes. We're talking about what we saw in front of the cameras, those big moments of folks walking through the doors at these universities. Integration efforts in South Carolina were peaceful at the higher education level for the most part. From what we saw, Harvey Gantt, the first black student to enroll at Clemson University, also had to sue to get in there with Matthew Perry, the lawyer. But why wasn't that precedent honored at USC, and it was when it was at Clemson? Because he appealed to the federal court, he got granted access to enroll. How come that didn't carry over here? And then maybe if you can tell us some backstory about this.
So courts were already affirming the rights of students like Dr. Treadwell to enter institutions of higher education. And it took place at Ole Miss. It had already taken place at Georgia. And yet there was a persistent reluctance on behalf of South Carolina to follow the dictates of the law. So by the time of January 28th of 1963, when Harvey Gantt, a native of Charleston, enters Clemson College, most black people in South Carolina knew what that meant. That, you know, the domino was about to fall. Even those at our university knew that. So when you look at the records of our Board of Trustees, you look at some of the communications, President Tom Jones was already communicating with other college presidents. He said, the time is coming. It's just a matter of when, and a matter of who will be that person. Well, I'm fortunate to be sitting next to that person today, who pushed the envelope in ways that radically transformed our institution. So by the fall of 1963, lunch counters, theaters, some hotels, all were integrated in some parts of South Carolina. Now that is a result of what Dr. Treadwell just mentioned. They were building on a legacy. This was a movement of ideas, a movement of people, a movement of institutions, a movement of young people across this state who dared to believe that change was possible. And so what we saw on September the 11th of 63 was in some ways the culmination of persistent struggle among many parts. When Dr. Treadwell mentioned when she came to campus, there was a quiet, there was a steady calm on campus. Some of that was well orchestrated. The university did not want to have a national news story that would carry negative connotations. So there were scripts created. There were plans devised. Law enforcement were told what to do. Certain members of the community were told not to come on campus. So it was a well-orchestrated moment. But on campus, there was a mixed emotion. So when you look at the Daily Gamecock and you look at some of the local news footage, some students are like, this cannot happen. This will be the end of the university. The university should close. But there were others who said, it's about time. And I was surprised when I read those comments. There were young white students, 17, 18, and 19, 20 years old, who said, this is the right thing to do. And I think that is in part of why you saw what was a most unusual response on the campus, because there were indeed some students and many faculty who said, it's about time this university represents all the citizens of South Carolina.
And Dr. Donaldson, you've been integral in getting monuments erected across the state, specifically here in Columbia, to these big moments, to these civil rights movements and these moments that we don't see monuments to as much as we've seen some other controversial monuments around town and across the state. But I want to ask you just about the need to have these out there. What's the importance of having a monument for them, for other folks to see? And what's the power of monuments, in your opinion?
I think this is an ongoing effort of public memorials and public history and public art that is critically needed to tell a full and complete story, to tell a correct story about those who transformed, those who built, particularly the University of South Carolina. When Dr. Treadwell was applying for admission, and there was litigation going forward, there were some students in the Daily Gamecock who said, we don't need any symbols on this campus. She wrote a letter to the Daily Gamecock. She said, she recounted her life story. She said, I am more than a symbol, and I will not be a symbol. And I think this monument is an affirmation of that. This is a monument of three individuals, but it's really a monument of a struggle. It is a monument of a longer story. So you walk in our horseshoe now, or walk across Scott campus, you will see McKissick and Pettigrew and LeConte and Lieber and the Carolinianna. You will see the names of those people who are believed to have built this campus generations ago. But this monument is a reminder of individuals who rebuilt this campus, who reconstructed this campus, and who opened the doors for people like me to be teaching at the University of South Carolina.
Dr. Treadwell, I want to give you the last question here with about a minute left. What do you hope this monument of you, Robert Anderson, and James Solomon Jr., what do you hope it does?
My hope is that it will remind people of where we have come from, but it's not over. It's a story that continues, and I'd like for young people particularly, but all, to look at and see and think through, what could I do? We're not there yet. We're really not there. And we somehow have to come together, get up and stand up for the issues, for the rights of all humans to have access to equal treatment and to equal opportunity.
You can find that interview, others, and more content on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. A.T. Shire, producer of the Lead podcast, is also here.
Yes,
to
yes.
Talk about things that are not news related. I'm going to stress that, A.T.
You're going to hold me to that
stress,
one.
I'm going to stress that.
You're going to hold me to that one.
I need to stress that.
I had a big Middle East rant teed up, but I got to scrap it now.
Let me circle back and run that one up the flagpole, A.T.
I
got
to
okay?
scrap it
I'm going to have you scrap that, okay?
I had a big thing
it's
all
in
about...
the script, not news related.
I got a lot of stuff teed up about the UK elections.
Yeah, he is just...
This
folks,
is bad for me. I don't
folks.
Know what I'm going to talk about now. Anyway, Gavin, it's good to be here. I love our summer talk series.
And that it's basically like TED Talks.
Yeah, I mean, TED Talk... wishes, you know, TED Talk X, we're Lead Talk X.
You know what they should do? Our listeners, the ones that we love and adore, give us some topics to do a TED Talk on or look into.
I would love to see Gavin give a presentation on the new rules implemented in the NFL.
Oh my God.
Or me give a talk about the rise
say
of
it.
Like
say it.
Say you say,
say
it.
It
of like pleated pants again or something like that.
Are
I don't
they
know.
Back?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just guessing. It goes JNCOs, then pleats, I think.
Yeah, these kids today were like, oh, like rediscovering all
we
this dame stuff.
We left
like,
baggy pants like, in the past for a reason, okay?
Yeah. And now they're doing, they're discovering boat shoes, which is awesome, great for them. But then they're saying that we can't wear ankle socks. Which
yes.
Do I typically wear ankle socks?
Wear no socks.
Yeah, well, I do like the no-show.
The no-show.
Below the ankle.
If you see the ankle, that really differentiates. And I got to say,
I got the
tam lines to prove that I was ahead of this curve. High socks, baby.
If I wore high socks, I would just look stunted. Like, and my calves would almost look too big.
Gavin's doing us a favor. Okay? He keeps those dogs under wrap. Okay,
it's the least amount on the foot.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's...
put a real silencer on those calves. But anyway, Gavin, we do have a call. Are you ready?
Okay.
Here we go.
All right.
You said it.
This is Wilson calling from Hartsville, South Carolina. Here to continue both the state employee talk and the tooth talk. So since I'm a state employee, I've got the state plus dental insurance. I know, fancy. But I get to go twice a year for dental cleanings. And it seems that anytime I go for a dental cleaning, especially when I see a new dentist, because we just recently moved to Hartsville a couple years ago, they get very excited about the lack of staining that I have in my teeth. Exciting, enthralled, impressed. Not sure what word to use there. But I'm not much of a caffeine drinker. I don't drink a lot of coffee or soda or tea, so that helps, I think, with the lack of staining that I have. Some people think it's weird that I don't ingest a lot of caffeine. I just think that I'm, you know, a slightly more evolved form of humanity. So I'd be curious to know what things you might have moved on from that us lesser humans have still need to hold on to. Also, just with some parental advice for AT, it's good to try to rest whenever the baby sleeps. You know, there's those things you see online about sleep when the baby sleeps. That's hard to do sometimes, but it's tempting at times to try to get chores and things done. But just take some time, relax, especially with all the needs and things that a new baby has. Just try to find some time for yourself and for Caitlin, right, both of you. Yeah, great. Good to talk to you. Enjoy the news. It's always fun. Bye.
Wilson, a fellow state employee, thank you for calling. He's got the Dental Plus AT.
Rubbing
it in our face with his higher level of evolution.
Yeah, the high evolutionary Wilson.
He doesn't need caffeine to function anymore. I want to be like Wilson. I need that higher level of evolution.
While we were listening, Gavin was screaming, I want to evolve the whole time, Wilson. Thank you for calling. And I got to say, like you, the dentist loves my teeth. I do not ingest caffeine very often.
Or hot liquid.
I hate a hot liquid.
He hates hot liquid. Stop sending us hot liquids, guys.
We get it. I just pour it straight down the drain. Not unless it's ramen or pho or something like that, you know. But I gotta say, as a new parent, I'm finally seeing the use of caffeine. I've never been closer to wanting a cup of coffee than in these moments
Cold brew.
It's 11:45 p.m. and you've been up for 11 hours 45 minutes. You're like, maybe, and you don't get to go to sleep yet. You know, like you gotta stay up for another few hours.
I'm gonna go ahead and let you get your news rant on. We're gonna pivot now. Yeah. Tell me about the Middle East, AT.
I've already forgot. Great food. I gotta say.
But I'm also a little nervous. But I mean, if you're that tired, the caffeine will just get you back to your baseline. But I'm thinking of you as normal AT plus caffeine could be a little jarring for me.
I don't want to evolve too much, you know?
I just have the normal dental plan, which is free when you're a state employee, but you just pay for the cleanings. But if you go to Dr. Karen Park, Gavin sent you.
She's not getting her hands
on
these
teeth. You might get a little discount.
She's not getting her hands on
these
teeth.
I know. I mean, she's always complimenting the enamel on these chompers. Can you hear that? It's an ASMR, guys.
That's why the pod sounds so good. A lot of people don't tell you.
I'm constantly doing that before I talk.
Because
you love that. Because it's
Gavin's like, always walking around flipping a coin with a toothpick in his mouth saying, meow, meow, meow. You know, like that's his big deal. He's pivoting to pinstripe suits, you know, like
Zoot Suit Riot.
Zoot Suit Riot, Riot. Throw back a bottle of beer, you know, cheer Bob and Daddy's. I think that's on Now One.
Oh, God. You know what's going to happen?
The 90s are back.
I know. You just planted that damn seed. Now these kids are like, you guys hear the Cherry Pop and Daddies?
Hey, man.
And then swing dancing is going to come back
for 1 second.
And we're going to be like,
Ska's alive, dude.
You guys just eat these trends alive every second. Like, you know, that was years of trends
they churn through it in two, three months. It's too fast. I can't wait till like nostalgia is like within the same year, you know, like.
Oh, I remember January. Yeah. Like, yeah, that was.
You can't wear that anymore. Are you crazy?
To which we were talking about, speaking of de-evolution, Devo, which Kent State. Mm-hmm. Huge alumni right mm-hmm. there. Michael Keaton went to Kent State. Drew Carey
went
to Kent State.
Batman. Drew Carey.
He had a kegger mm-hmm. on one on top of the dorms. Did not graduate from Kent State.
Mm-hmm. Went.
Had gone. Attended. Previously yeah. attended.
Not quite alum.
Did not graduate.
Not quite alum.
Still cling on. But
still might finish. Still might finish it.
Drew Carey thing the other day. What was that about?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not going to go into it. Look it up. It's on the internet. We were talking, you and me, AT, we were talking.
Okay. Go on.
Quoting all your sound effects now.
Okay.
About the cell phone.
Yes.
How important it is, but also how disruptive it is.
Yes.
And schools banning cell phones, which mm-hmm. I support. You know, if you can't keep it in your locker, then you guys are going to ruin it for each other.
Hey, keep it in your locker, bro.
You know, like, you don't need to be on your phone all day at school. Like, you need to be focused on learning, guys.
It truly is a toxic screen.
We barely had them. Like, we had them, but you did not bust them out. They were also not smart.
We had them in the way that we had a phone that phoned.
If I needed to call a parent, like, on 9/11, yeah, guys, we did have phones that did not work on 9/11.
I didn't have one.
You didn't have a phone?
Not then yet. Not yet. My dad had, like, an Ericsson phone, but I personally didn't have one
yet. Well, see, since... The parents were going through their separation. That was
this
Gavin's,
is where you went up.
That's
me
where
here.
Gavin said the best way for all of us to stay in touch mm-hmm. is the family plan.
And
I had a whole pitch.
I think
eighth grade.
I could have stayed out of this fracas, this fight. But now with Rena, mm-hmm. I need to weigh in. And I'm against child phone having.
Yes,
and like, I don't like it.
Like the pad is okay to an extent. But, like, who knows when they start getting the YouTube and they start getting algorithms spinning stuff up. Social media, I would hold off as long as possible mm-hmm, because, mm-hmm. my God, it's not good for anybody.
I'm not starting Rena, like, her own private Instagram right now. Yeah,
God.
I know. The Instagram, that's a place for us millennials only. And that's fine, you know, but, like, it's going to be something different by then. But I don't think the kids need a cell phone in the way that
plugged
they need like a smartphone.
We were saying you'd have to go down to the office
exactly.
at school to
yes.
call your parents to come pick you up. No one died.
I can trust
it wasn't immediate.
That my child is at school.
Yes.
And if she's not, the school's going to call me and say, where's your kid? And honestly, hide an AirTag on these kids.
We're going to chip her. We're going to put a chip
in
her. That's fine.
If someone else finds her, you scan the chip. Boom.
As a 20-something, I should have been chipped, you know, because God knows where I'd end up.
Yeah, I mean...
Here I am now.
One day, Gavin just regained sentience and was a podcast host. I mean, there were 7 or 8 years in there.
Reactivated.
Yeah, he woke up like Neo in The Matrix
Scanning.
When he comes into the real world.
But now they're bringing the Nokia back, even though Nokia doesn't own Nokia anymore. Nokia.
Yes.
The old phone's back.
The bricks.
Which does have a smartphone, but...
I hope there's a real, like... Luddite early 2000s revival when Rena's older and she's like, I want a dumb phone that takes 35 pictures.
That's the one thing
only.
That these kids are trying to glam onto with like, the early 2000s, 90s. But you know what they're not doing? They're not busting out those Nokia dumb phones.
And they're not using
the best of both.
The no skip CD players. Go listen to CDs again, okay?
Yeah. I dare you.
Start listening to mini disc players, all right? Those suck, all right? You wanna get real street cred? Dude, use something that sucks for a really long time.
Understand what you have.
It sucked. Okay, and that's all we had.
Oh, and now you have every single song at your fingertips whenever you want it.
Mm-hmm.
I
had to walk around with my 96
yes.
CD holder.
The binder.
In my backpack every day at school.
Always ready.
Always
you never
ready.
Know when you're going to want to listen to some Aqua.
Bro, maybe I want to listen to Rain and Blood by Slayer, and maybe I want to listen to South of Heaven by Slayer. I need them all.
I don't know which Nirvana album I want to listen to.
Gross. More like Pantera.
I don't know. Have you ever seen these shirts the kids are wearing nowadays?
Name five songs, losers.
Anyway, if you can't name five songs, call
in. We all know about Courtney Love, and we're just going to leave it there.
Yep, she did it. Anyway, Gavin, hit him with the outro. You do the outro. Courtney did it. You do this.
Gosh. I think the kids won't get that. That's us talking to the millennials and the Gen Xers
yes,
and above.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's for us. It's like Instagram. That's for us. And just like the outro is for you,
and
Gavin.
And you got to do
it.
The outro.
And it's for
and
you.
You're doing the outro. Thank you, Wilson, for calling. Wilson, thank you for calling. We appreciate that phone call. Be like Wilson. Give us a shout. 803-563-7169. We love hearing from you guys. You can always leave us a review on Apple Podcasts as well. And you can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. We know, Courtney. Yeah, you know, that's gonna go, we're gonna go ahead and stop on the way.